Wanda Fields, Angie Smolden interviewer, November 30th, 1993. Wanda, let me ask you, if you will, to tell us your date of birth and some biographical information about yourself.
I was born May 12, 1921 in Brownwood, Texas. And actually, we weren't living there. We lived in Brawley, California, but it gets to 120 degrees down there in the summer. So Mother would take our family back to Brownwood, Texas, which was not too much cooler there, but at least it was cooler. We stayed there in the summer. And then, I went to school in Brawley, California, graduated, didn't quite graduate from the high school there through my junior year, and then went to Long Beach Polytechnic High School for my senior year, and then went to Long Beach Junior College for 2 years, went to the University of Redlands and graduated there with a degree in a major in music and a minor in sociology. Then I married. The Christmas before we before I graduated, Christmas of 1942, and I graduated in May 43. I didn't begin teaching immediately. We had our little home there in Ocean Beach, California, and I was busy, you know, as a young bride there. I played for the little church there, and I directed the choir. I've done that a great deal. I directed the choir there, and we had this was war years, during the war, and in San Diego there were a lot of people that came out for the jobs, but also the wives of servicemen there. So we had lots and lots of young people in our community. And I had worked up a male quartet, and we sang quite a bit, not only in our own church, but we went to other churches and sang and, you know, traveled around. And they used to have sings, you call it, or whatever, a Sunday afternoon. Yeah. People come in, and the Blackwood Brothers Quartet, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they were famous at that time and traveling all over. They traveled quite a bit. They would be at these things, and also our quartet would sing, which was fun to do that. And then in 1945, end of the war, was just ending, we went up to Los Angeles and attended the Bible Institute in Los Angeles for a year and a half. And then the next semester, it was in 47, that spring semester, I went to USC to take some more classes toward getting a teacher's credential. I didn't have quite enough before from college, so we went that semester, and I was going to teach in Compton then. I had the job all lined up for the fall, and in the meantime, I found out that our first son was on his way, so I didn't take the job. And then a couple of years later, well, not even that much later, maybe a year and a half later, friends of ours from San Diego were up here at the Baptist Mission. In fact, two couples from that we had known there were up at the Baptist Mission here, and they needed another couple to come. So they wrote, and we said we would come. And he would have been working in the defense plants and had been laid off of his job. So we came up to Kodiak to be parents at the Baptist Mission. We were there for 3 years. We had 14 children in our home, including our own son. And the last 6 months, we had 15 children.
Oh, wow.
So we were parents, just like, I mean, it was a home, just like a regular home, or maybe a little different with so many children. And there were regulations that everybody had in the mission, but they were just our own children for those 3 years. And then after that, we didn't want to continue in that work, and I applied for a teaching job here in Kodiak. I began teaching. That was in 1952 that I began teaching. My first class was a fifth grade, and we had what we call the old downtown school. In fact, was it that year or the next year? It was the next year. That first year, I was in the old downtown school, which had about six rooms above, and then it had some rooms below, and then there were Quonset huts all around that we taught in, and I taught in a Quonset hut. And being my first year, the superintendent said, and he had the desk there, you'll have about 18 pupils in this Quonset hut. I ended up with 25 for the whole year. Very crowded, desks that were on wooden runners, so they were stationary desks. You couldn't, I had three rows of stationary desks. You couldn't do much, you know. Room for my desk up front. And
how much did you get paid a month?
Yeah, really.
Well, I think about, it wasn't more than maybe $3,000 a year or something. I mean, it wasn't very much, I know.
Amazing.
Not too much. And so that was an interesting year. And I had fifth grade, all that.
Who was the superintendent?
Ivor Schott. He came the same year we did. That was his first year here. And he stayed for 20 years, was the superintendent. Then the next year, the first wing of the existing school was built from the office, cafeteria is that area, up to, well, it's hard to describe it now, it's changed so much.
Now, is that the where the junior high is right now, or is that?
Yeah, I guess. I don't
Main, maybe.
It's where Main was.
Is it where Main,
it was where Main school was, but they built however many classrooms that was. And they didn't get it finished until October that year, so we didn't start school till October. And then we had to teach on some Saturdays to make up the time, so we'd have 180 days for the year. So
I wonder if the kids like that at
all.
Well,
not too much, but anyway, it's the way we did. And then the next year, I went down to third grade for a couple of years. Then I stayed in the lower elementary grades. I taught for 20 years to retire, over a period of 25 years, because our second son, Duncan, came along in 1956, so I was off about 2 years. And then our other son came along in 1960, so I took off about 2 years that time, too. Although that time, the kindergarten teacher left Christmas. She just went away at Christmas.
Left, didn't come back.
And I was apparently the only one in Kodiak certified teacher that they could get to fill in. So they came, so I finished out the kindergarten year, that year. In fact, I just had one session. We combined the classes so that I just had one session of kindergarten, finished out that year. And let's see, what were those years? What's some more interesting things about? Let me think of the year. About 1971, this time of year, November, they came to me, the principal came to me, and they didn't have a music teacher out at the base. And they wondered, I was teaching second grade, they wondered if I would go out and teach music at the base. So I did, in the middle of the school year. And that was interesting because we had three second grades there in the main school. So I had to divide up my children among the others. They weren't so crowded, but what they could take were the ones I had. So it was fun, you know, parsing out these kids to the other two teachers. And so I went out to the base, and that's an adventure in itself, driving out there every morning. We had a lot more snow, ice, hazardous roads then, and we didn't have the good traction on tires and things that we do now, and you know, all of this. In fact, I had chains on my tires, and sometimes the chains would break. So I had quite a few interesting experiences getting to school that year, the rest of that year. But I enjoyed it. And then I stayed out there until I finished for six more years. I stayed out and taught out there. I taught first grade the next year, And the other teacher there was a new teacher. She'd had no experience in first grade, and here we were, two new teachers to first grade. So we did a few things for a while, and we knew how to get started, but then we didn't know where to go. Went to the principal, what do we do now? You know? So anyway, he helped us find the right books and everything to get started, and we did all right in that year for the first grade. And then I went up to second grade. Yeah, second grade the rest of the time. But that was interesting to be out there. I enjoyed teaching, you know, wherever we did, I really enjoyed it. But I did enjoy out there because it was a small group. There were, well, that first year when I was teaching music, we had about 500 students in that school. The Navy was still there, and it's interesting, there wasn't a classroom for me. There wasn't even a place to put my things. So they had a little place partitioned off in the cafeteria, this little place. And the kids would come in, you know, at noon, not eating all there. But I just had this little place where I could keep my music books and a desk and whatever. And
That's
kind of like now at East. Yeah, and then I had to, yeah, right. Then I had to take everything that I wanted for my class, you know, to the classroom. And so I wheeled that piano up and down the halls a lot. Didn't always take it with a lot of time, you know, otherwise you don't have the music you want. And we, of course, if I wanted to play the drums or cymbals or whatever, you know, little things, I have to carry them into the room and back again. So that was an interesting, very interesting year. And I started to say it because it was the next year the Navy had left, and we went down to pretty much regular sized classrooms, and we didn't have every room taken. So the music teacher that year had a great big room all to himself, and everything was in there, self-contained, and he didn't have to go from room to room for teaching the music. So that was interesting. let's see. Now, all during this time, of course, I continued to play the organ at the Community Baptist Church. I played the organ there and directed the choir most of the time. Sometimes we'd have another director, but most of the time did the Christmas cantatas, Easter cantatas, whatever, all those years. And then when we moved over to the Berean Baptist Church, we only had piano at first. And I played that, and then we eventually got a small organ, a little small, and then we got a larger one, which we have now. But I've done that all along. Played for the church, and I directed the choir there for some time. I haven't now for several years. And in the early years, we presented, Messiah, we did quite early, and I played the organ for that. In fact, I have several times for the playing.
You did the last time, I think, when I sang, just 2 years
yes,
ago.
Yes, I did. Well,
was it 2 years ago? Two or three years ago.
I only played on that. I just played some background. I didn't really play the whole. But the orchestra was playing most of the music, and I did just, but I didn't play with you. The school, one time, when Mr. Welch was here, the school choir presented the Messiah. So he asked me to come in and play for that. And I played that for them. I played the whole thing several times. I played the whole thing. Yeah. Another time, he had the community choir. Then Welch again, Mr. Welch, had the community choir, and. They did hire a fellow from Anchorage to come over and play. I guess he played, what was his instrument? It wasn't an organ, it was another instrument. A fine musician, I'm sure, a professional musician. He was to come over on Saturday for the performance on Sunday afternoon. He came, he didn't know the music, he couldn't play it at all. So at 7 o'clock, we were sitting, you and our son, 7 o'clock on Saturday night, Mr. Welch called and he said, I wondered if you would be able to play for us tomorrow for the Messiah. Because I played for him before, you know. And I thought, yes, I guess so, you know. So I took my music, I have my music here that I'll mark, took it up, practiced with him. We didn't go through the whole thing one time Saturday night, because we're working on a special thing. So I went through what we could that night. And then Nathan Lewis and I got together Sunday morning. He was playing the piano and I was playing the organ. So we got together and practiced about an hour and a half before church on Sunday morning over some of the other things we had gone over before. And Sunday afternoon, I played the Messiah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. One, not even probably a whole day's notice, 18 hours.
Oh, no,
hours
no.
Notice,
18
maybe
hours,
or
it was all over.
Oh,
ago.
Man.
But I was just glad I could do it, Joe, pick it up. Mr. Welch was very great. Well, I don't think he could have used the piano, but he wouldn't have the organ. There wasn't anyone else that could pick up.
That's funny. What did they do with the guy that they hired, I wonder? They just
I don't know. I imagine he was just astounded that I come in and play this thing, you know. And then he disappeared. I imagine he went back to his hotel and got on the first plane out. Wouldn't that have been an embarrassing situation?
It would have been embarrassing.
Yes.
It's funny that that somebody would have done that.
Yeah,
unless he came from Anchorage thinking, oh, I'm going to Kodiak with that misconception of Kodiak being maybe small.
And he may not have realized the difficulty of the music.
Yeah.
It is a thing you just make up.
Yeah. That's funny. I mean, it's not funny, but...
Yeah.
Oh, now, were you teaching when, during the time of the tsunami, of that earthquake?
Yes. I was teaching.
What was
second grade?
Well, the impact of that on this teaching and the kids and the classroom.
All right. The tsunami came on Friday. Earthquake and tsunami on Friday. So the school, the junior high school and the gym, was the place of refuge for the people whose homes had washed away, or for some reason or another they didn't have a place to stay. So, and we were living in the Baranoff Mansion, the museum downtown, and because of our location, they were asked us to move out of the way because they didn't know how much the water would come up and all. So we went up to the school. Well, actually, they didn't tell us to. We were up on the mountain to about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then we saw everybody else going home, so we drove down and went to the school, and that was weird. We walked in there. They had, all the lights were off.
Gone. Yeah.
So they had candles in that long hallway. That other building wasn't there then. The other building was a long hallway in the bottom there. And they had a couple of candles and one candle on a table way at the end. And there were people leaning up against the lockers all the way along, you know. So we found our way into the gym and people were just lying on the floor, you know. I mean, they were refugees, you know.
Yeah.
Thrown out of their homes or whatever. So we stayed there and they had the Navy brought in stuff for breakfast the next morning. We served us mush. And anyway. Then Monday morning, the school was still filled with all of these people that didn't have anywhere to go. The Navy, that night, we stayed there a second night too. The Navy that night, it was Saturday night, brought in little mattresses, you know, just about this wide. They're Navy mattresses. They brought in, I don't know how many, but enough to cover the gym floor. So everybody picked out a mattress, and at least we had a little more comfort that night for sleeping, if you can call babies crying all night and this kind of thing. And, you know, they were so upset, the children, of course, over this. And it was certainly a great leveler, you know. We were on our cots beside the Russian priest and his family, and some of the other people, you know, I think of, I won't mention other names, but people that wouldn't ordinarily speak to you or have anything to do with you. Well, they were on their cot over there,
yeah,
too, you know, and a lot of people with central abilities and all that. But the school was, as I said, was occupied. Oh, they had to evacuate the hospital.
Oh.
So they brought, because it's on the waterfront, you know, mm-hmm, of course, like you say, they didn't know what the water was going to do.
Yeah.
So they evacuated the people from the hospital up there. There was a baby born up there that night. And our magistrate had been in the hospital under an oxygen tent, and they brought her up, and she did die in the process.
Oh.
She was counted as a victim of the tsunami, too. There weren't that many here, around 30 altogether around Kodiak Island, and considering how much was destroyed, that wasn't so many people to have been lost. But they would have the food, you know. We just ate breakfast up there, and then we'd already planned on Easter. There was on Good Friday was the tsunami. Easter Sunday, we'd already planned a place where we were going to eat. So with some more family,
uh-huh,
so we went to their house for the day. And then by that night, we went back to our house, to the museum, and we didn't have water. I believe the electricity was on by that time, if I remember right. Our oil stove had gone off, and we had tried to fix it. In fact, one of the rumors there had been digging up the ground thinking the oil pipe had broken, but it hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
Just the carburetor switch had lifted in the time, so we just went back. I got to thinking about that, lying on this cot,
uh-huh,
you know, and sure enough, when I went back and fixed the carburetor switch on the oil stove, then we could light our stove again, so we did have heat, and I believe we had electricity. We didn't have water. The next day, we had we took a hose to the neighbor's house, which had water, and we brought water into our house, and then in a day or two, it was restored. But they did ask the teachers, all of the teachers, to come up to the school and help with, you can imagine, people there, the things that needed to be done up there. But I had three boys at home, but I had two young children at home, and I felt they needed me more than going up there, so I didn't go up. But I know a lot of the teachers went up, spent their week up there helping the people that, helping whatever needed to be done.
Still up there, yeah.
It was a lot, I'm sure, that needed to be done up there. So, as I say, the schools were closed all that week.
Mm-hmm.
Then by the following week, we were back in session. And about Tuesday of that following week, this afternoon, there was a real big shock. It was just a quick shock, you know, like that. It wasn't long like the other one was. Of course, everybody was nervous anyway, just, you know, on edge. And the funny thing, in California, as we were growing up, we had earthquakes all the time there. So we'd been told, in an earthquake, get under your desk. So here this quake came, and I said to the kids, get under your desk. And I crawled under mine. You know, they all did it. We never practiced or anything.
Yeah.
They all just, you know,
did it.
Impulse. They all got under their desk. That's to prevent glass or anything,
right,
coming up. So we were all, nothing happened, actually. And I had about, probably 20, 22 students. By the end of the day, so many parents had come to get their students. They were all upset about this earthquake. And I had about 9 students left by the end of the day. But that was the only other thing that came up to disturb them. But it was a very traumatic time to go through. It's hard to describe it.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to go through anything like that again. You know, the thing was, you didn't know who had been lost,
right,
in the tidal wave. And when you'd see your friends or even people you didn't know, oh, they're still here, you know, you just want to go up and hug everybody because they were still alive.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. Along with that, I keep thinking of these funny things. Along with that, when DeWitt was out at the ranch, Andrew Marson Bay, and he filled up with gas out there, filled his truck with gas, he thought the whole town would be down because we've been in California,
uh-huh,
earthquakes, but it wasn't like that. And so he got home, and the only person that he saw on the road coming in was Al Nixon going back to his place at Bell's Flats. They passed somewhere on the road, you know. And then somehow we got the idea that Al Nixon had gotten caught somewhere in the water and he had drowned. I mean, you know, we have the idea that he wasn't alive anymore. So about a week later, Al comes to the house. I open the door, and I probably stood there a minute, realizing that he was actually standing there, you know. I thought I was seeing a ghost. Finally, I came to myself and spoke to him, you know, but I'm sure that I stood there and stared for a while.
And he just gone back?
Well, he had just gone back to his house. Yeah, no problem, but I don't know why we thought that he, you know, you hear all these rumors, you
right.
know, and an earthquake. And actually, well, there were some people who knew very well that were lost. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
But that was interesting.
Structurally, do you think that that the buildings here were just were built more soundly,
most,
maybe than some of the ones in California,
they,
or was it just
they? Most of them here at that time, and I suppose still are wooden structures. Mm-hmm. The wooden structures give.
Yeah.
If you have bricks or stucco or things like that, that's the things that crumbles. The only thing in the museum that was the only damage that we saw to the building itself, and we didn't discover that for several months. On the third story, the chimney from the stove downstairs goes up through the wall, and there was some cracked bricks on that chimney up there. And when we discovered it, we were able to fix it. That's the only, see that bricks,
yeah,
and that,
right.
not the wood. The wood,
right.
you know, it gives.
Gives,
uh-huh. And so we didn't, no other structural damage.
I have relatives that live in California. I have never been through, I've just been through little mini tremors. And I know that they say the same thing. They don't want to ever have to go through them again. My grandma went through that big San Francisco one.
The San Francisco
in 1912, 1918 or something.
Uh-huh, yeah.
She was just a young girl. Yeah, I remember her telling me about that, how the stairs in her house just looked like they were just waving.
Yeah. Well, I just had Weston Wallace home at the time. We went out on the front lawn, and I could not have stood up if I hadn't held on to Weston. It was that strong. It lasted for 4.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would stop and then it would come again. And we could look over. You may not have been in that situation, but look over where the oil tanks were, and the way you look at them, you look at them from that direction, there's three tanks there. You can't see between them because of their position. There's two here and one back here. You can't see between them. During that earthquake, they parted, and you could see between those things. We're just fortunate they didn't burst like we did over in the sewer. You know, they burst. Things like that, you know.
I hope we don't have one again. But
the thing was that the next day, the 20th, what's happened on the 27th? 28th was Duncan's birthday. So we had planned a big party to go out to Anton Larson Bay for his birthday most of the time. And usually we take 8 or 10 boys, a bunch of boys out. And so I had gone down that afternoon and I had bought the wieners and the buns and the pop and all the things to go with it, you know. And I had those sitting on the table. I put the wieners in the refrigerator, but the other things were still sitting on the table, fruit, potato chips, whatever. Well, when the earthquake came, about 5:30 in the evening, we hadn't eaten. I had beans on the stove, hadn't eaten, and we just got in our car and went on. When he got home from the ranch, we just got in our car and went on up the mountain each day. So of course there was no party the next day. But after a while, you know, we hadn't had supper. We were getting hungry, so we told he went back down. He was going to go down and bring up our car. We got up in the pickup. He's going to bring our car up too. And I told him, bring us something to eat. So here he got all this picnic stuff, and brought up. That's what we had to eat about midnight. We were up there eating all this picnic stuff. But he didn't get the wiener schnitzel. We had just the pop and the other, all the other stuff. And little Wallace was four. He said, I don't like this picnic. Let's go home.
Oh.
Now this is really much history.
Oh, that's okay. Well, let's see, what can we do to tie? How about the cost of food? Maybe do you remember about maybe how much it cost for that picnic? Food prices?
I don't remember, but it wouldn't have been near the cost of
now.
I don't remember exactly what it would have been. But the prices have gone up.
Yeah. Did they go up a lot after, like right after the earthquake or anything like that because of other people coming in or doing? Was there much of that, you know, kind of taking advantage by people coming from down below up here to help rebuild, but raising their prices? Did you guys notice much of that or anything? That's good.
I don't think so. I didn't notice that. Of course, what the downtown of Kodiak was washed away, mm-hmm. downtown pretty well. And then we always said that the urban renewal that came in, they came.
I know that's a controversial thing.
They came in, it was to be a two-phase thing, you know, and they did phase one, but we felt that they almost did more damage than the earthquake, because they had it mapped out where they were going to, you know, do all of this. They tore down buildings that were perfectly good and got people out of their homes that we just felt was unfair, because the homes were not damaged. There wasn't any point in getting them out of their homes, but they came in and they did they did straighten out the streets, and I suppose didn't make the other streets, you know, when we first arrived, Phil Stone, the superintendent of the Baptist Mission, and we rode in the car with him to the mission and down Main Street, and it you know, went like this.
Oh.
I mean, it wasn't straight at all. And he said, well, they were watching a bear on the mountain when they made this street. But they, urban renewal did straighten up the streets, and we got paved streets and some things out of it. But they did take a lot of buildings and some of the historical buildings from downtown. How bad that they disturbed.
They pretty much, did they take almost all but the Erskine House? Or?
Yeah, just about everything. Just about everything. Yeah. Besides that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. The post office, what's Canada building now, is the old post office. That was standing then. The Russian church, of course, wasn't hurt. It was pretty much everything, you know, on the ocean side of that was taken out. But some of the things over on where Betty Springhill lives now, mm-hmm. that area, there were several houses in there that were perfectly good. In fact, we had a house just kind of across the street from her there. Mm-hmm. It was perfectly good, but they took it away, you know, for the urban
renewal. Well, we were talking in class a little bit about this urban renewal, and it came up that a lot of times they would take more from landowners, or they wouldn't parcel back really as much as they had taken from individual people. Like
that was probably true, and they were to have phase two, but I think the people rebelled and we didn't go on with the second phase of what they had planned.
Government doing its thing again.
Yeah,
they get in there and they try and fix things that aren't broken.
Right. When I first taught, phonics was the thing. You know, you had your phonics books and went through that. And we went in a phase over the 25 years that I taught. Then the new books got away from that pretty well, and they weren't teaching the phonics, and the kids were really, I felt, were missing out because of that. And then by the end of the time I was teaching, it was back in to have the phonics. And the same thing on the math. We were teaching just kind of the regular math there. And then we went into this new math, they called it. And we had, I don't know if you probably didn't go through that stage of the, we had the little man with his five fingers, a little wooden thing of a man there. And anyway, it was this new math. And I felt it was more confusing to the kids.
Yeah.
I didn't feel they were getting it as well as just pretty teachable times tables and things like this. And then that didn't last but a few years, and then they went to something else. They were going to continue changing the math curriculum. And I think that would confuse the kids as they went up through the different grades, you know, to intermesh all these things they were learning in the math. Yes, there were a lot of changes. And of course, we started out, when I first taught, with Dick and Jane and those little books, which, you know, for the time, they were fine. And then we got into some of the other programs. Now, I never did do the, I can't even think of the name of it now, the reading program. They were doing it just as I left. I never got into that, but they used that
SRE
for a while.
Maybe?
What?
SRE?
No. Not SRE. I did some SRE. I almost had it. I can't think of it now. But they did that for a while, and then they let that go and took something else. You know, it's just been change has been a constant change. And a lot of it was experimental, shall we say, and wasn't, I don't think that it brought the kids what they really needed. Now, we did go through an experiment here in Kodiak. I don't know if you're aware of that or not, when Dr. Lynn was here. And it was when East School was first built, and they built East School to do this, of a team teaching type of thing, or it was even more than that. I mean, it was everybody involved in this thing. And the kids would go from room to room for their different subjects, even in grade school. And we were doing that at Maine, too. Now, at East, it was much easier to do because the building was built for that. And so they had folding partitions and all, so they could expand rooms or make smaller rooms or whatever, for that. And in Maine, it wasn't so easy because the kids always had to go out in the hall and back into a room. And then one year they cut doors from all the rooms to the next room, so they wouldn't have to go out in the hall, they could go through the doors. And of course that didn't turn out to be too good either. and that last, we were doing that. Well, we did it in Maine, I think only one year, but they did it at East more than that, several years. But they finally decided that just a single classroom for the class was better, rather than having these little kids run from place to place. The teacher next to me there, we were doing third grade. No, we were doing first, second, and third grade. We did that, first, second, and third grade.
Oh,
that year.
Block.
First, second, and third grade we were doing. And it was difficult, of course, if you're really trained in that, I guess you do it. But I found that it was difficult to get to all of the people for what they needed, you know. You could emphasize one thing with one group, but I always felt like I was neglecting something else. That year, after the others had not done this anymore, the one teacher and I exchanged. I would teach her class English, and she would teach my class math. So we did exchange for that. They would go over there, and I would teach English. And again, when you have first, second, and third grade, I felt so that I was neglecting the third grade so much. I mean, you have to tell the little ones what to do. Second grade, you can set pretty much to do themselves. And but you, I just felt like I was neglecting the other. And we only did that that one semester. And the next year we decided we'd just have self-contained classrooms. Yeah. And it worked well better.
I remember it was, must have been 1973 or 72. It was before I moved from Western Washington to Eastern Washington, that they had just started that in my school. I was fourth grade, I think. And we had to do that moving from this room to this room, but they had the accordion doors. But all I really remember was being really confused a lot of the time, getting up and taking your things and going to another desk. Yeah. Even though it was maybe only 20 feet away, it was hard for a little kid.
Yeah,
to
it
do.
Was. Now, 1 year, I remember how much the year we did this, they were finishing up East School, I guess, finishing up some school. So we had to have a class in the morning, class in the afternoon. So the morning class went from about 8 to 12 or something, I've forgotten the hours now. And then the afternoon class would come and go 1 to 5 or whatever it was. You know, I don't remember the hours. But that was real bad because the kids, we had to take all the stuff out of their desk. We had bags for them or something. They'd have to put all of their things in this bag, and we set them over in the closet. Then in the morning when they came, I had a morning class, go get their bags, you know, to use for the day, put it all back in, and put it. It was, and that was really confusing. And, you know, you lose things and get things mixed up. We didn't do that all year, but however long we needed to until the building was ready that year. So we've been through a lot of different things like that.
If you... Let's see, I know, how about discipline? You know how discipline has kind of changed over the past 10 years.
Yes, it has.
Do you think that if you could start right now, do you think you'd choose the same profession? Do you think you would?
I wouldn't. Well, for several reasons, but I would. When I first began teaching, you could discipline the children. Now, you weren't allowed to spank them,
right,
this kind of thing, but you could take them to the principal, and he would if they deserved a spanking. I remember one little boy one time tore a book, and I didn't say anything to him, but I took it to the superintendent. I was shot at that time. Said, you know, what should I do about this little boy that tore this book? He said, you should have disciplined him right then. You know, I said, go ahead, and, you know, whatever you need to do. So, and that was the thing, you know. And the thing that bothers me now, particularly the little ones, because I taught little ones so much, they come up and hug you. And lots of times they want to sit on your lap. And a lot of them didn't have loving at home.
Right.
You knew that's what they needed. You can't do that. I don't even touch them anymore. And I would find it very difficult, because I like to show my affection
right.
to the kids.
Right.
It would be very difficult if I couldn't put my arms around a little boy, you know, and I certainly wouldn't mean a thing by
it. Right, yeah. I know, and I understand, I mean, it's the same thing, and I teach older kids, too. I mean, I teach junior high through high school, and teaching music, my main thing is teaching band. If I have a kid that does really well, lots of times I want to be able to give them a hug.
Sure.
And you have to be really, really careful.
Yes.
And you have to be really careful because the kids are so aware of it. If you get an obnoxious or obstinate kid, you know, the kid can just, you know, blow things.
That's it. They know they can get away with things. And particularly when I first started teaching. Well, actually, the kids had no discipline at home, I felt. They came to school ready to learn, ready to follow directions. But as time went along, they did not have the discipline. And they didn't come to school in a frame of mind to learn. It was difficult.
Yeah, I know. I see that too. And it's frustrating because there still is a small faction, small group that are disciplined at home.
Is that going to look right in there? Don't put the curtains in there.
No, I take them off.
No, okay. Take the curtains off. Got to get some new curtains. Those old green ones don't go anymore.
What'd you put in there?
I'll have to show you.
Oh, okay.
We wanted to brighten it up. That other has been there ever since. We've been in this house 28 years.
Oh, yeah.
And that wallpaper has been there all that time. And I didn't realize how bad it was till she took part of it down and put up the new, and then you could see the contrast. Oh, how horrible that has been.
It's funny, honey. I know. I've had that, things like that happen, you know, like you move something, you realize, oh, used to be that color. Wow. Well, thanks. It's probably,
yeah.
Do you think of anything else that you want to sum up? Or?
Oh, when I was teaching music out at, since you mentioned that, out at the base, I had a choir. I took some of the fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, some of them that I thought sang. Well, I had about maybe 35, 40 kids, quite a big choir, and we had to do it after school, and they were all bused, or a lot of them were bused, so they had to, they had to take that time, and then they would get the last bus going home, those that needed to. But I practiced with them, I don't remember, it was every day or maybe two or three times a week. And then, toward the end of the school year, we went to the other schools in town, including St. Mary's, and sang for the other children. And I thought that was real neat. We had a bus take us around one day with appointments all day, you know. And I thought that was real neat. I enjoyed doing that. I think the kids did too.
We do that every spring with my little bands. Usually take the beginning band, let them play for the people at Maine, or I let the people from Maine come to the beginning band. But then I take the older 7th and 8th graders, and then sometimes the high school. And it's fun for them. I mean, it's fun for the other schools, I think, to have that visitation.
I don't think that they have been... Do you want to get that? Kiki?
No.
I don't think that they have been doing that before. Another teacher before. More of that.
Oh.
But anyway, we've come on.
Probably start kind of a tradition that traveling, maybe that traveling music, I mean, possibly.
Yeah.
But, do you know Marilyn Davidson at all? She's one of the music teachers now, and she started a choir, an after-school choir, with the three schools. She had 160. Can you believe it? And they have to meet in the auditorium, and she has a megaphone.
That's ambitious.
That is very ambitious.
When I was teaching at Maine, Jenny Crumbly was teaching. Did she have first graders? She was teaching a grade out there. I don't remember now just which one. So once in a while she'd help me with something too out there.
It's funny to think that she's been, but she has been. She's been teaching for many years.
She had. Well, you see, that was 70. That would be 20 years because that was 72. I think that was about her first year here, 72. So it's been 3 years. She's done a lot.
Yeah, she has. Thanks, Wanda. Appreciate this.
Okay. You won't know where's my wrong notes and where are the notes that don't sound on the piano right.